Hello, is this Mike?
This is Mike.
Okay, well, hold on. Thanks for calling. Let me let this finish here, and thanks for calling.
Yeah, how's it going, Greg?
Oh, it's all right. I can hear you fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Okay, well, let's let this finish. I got to plug in my computer.
Okay.
Is soaked with the tears because the baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and focus on the close up, missed all the
best. I can't reform.
No God, like hocus pocus. So don't sit back, kick back, and watch the world get worse. Rap news that's in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there when your baby's old enough to relay.
Good evening. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. I'm Craig Canada, your host. This is the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. I've got Mike Botan on the line tonight from Grace Farm. Say hello, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. I'm kind of worried about the weather, but I'm glad to be able to focus on something else.
Yeah. Hey, we actually had some good weather here today for the first time in a while. I'm surprised to hear you're having questionable weather.
Well, not here in Santa Cruz. It's actually beautiful today. I was actually thinking about somewhere else, but that's not what this show is about. They've been having tornadoes over in the southeast, very severe, and I have family there.
All right, Alabama, yeah.
Actually, that one that went through Tuscaloosa missed my mother's house by 300 yards.
Oh, my word. I'm really kind of feeling a little ashamed that I didn't actually remember or think about that you had family there. You know, sometimes when, you know, things aren't close to home for you, you tend to forget.
Well, yeah, and I really haven't thought about it that much before now as far as things going on in Alabama, but I've been really focused on it recently, as I said. She told me today, her neighbor said, the tornado was headed straight for them, and then it turned north.
Lovely.
And so, you know, I'm just hoping that things continue to go well there. Why don't you tell us, you said things are going let's see where. Why don't you tell us, let's see, about yourself? I know I was reading last week when I thought I was broadcasting, and I wasn't. The article in the LA Times, which is the first time I heard of Grace Farms, and that was, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
And they were talking about Hay Fork, and I know I was reading it on the air, and it said that you had been growing marijuana illegally for 30 years and moved to Trinity County to grow. And now, that's not quite right, is it? Don't you have lots of family there?
No, that was actually one of the first times, you know, that my little naive butt learned that, you know, not everybody's going to take what you say and put it in the right context. And, yeah, I never said that. She got some things wrong. I've been smoking for 35 years. I haven't been growing for 35 years. I've wanted to be a grower ever since I was a kid. But, no, that wasn't factual. But there were other parts in the article that were. You know, I make no bones about it. I admit that when I first started out, thinking that I'd grow a little bit of medical, that I'd make a little money on the side for myself. And truthfully, that's the thought of many. But the epiphany for me was that I realized in this weed-rich state that there was a lot of patients getting left behind and a lot of people being hurt by the, you know, I'm going to get mine. And I really was ashamed of myself, and I was actually really ashamed of the whole scene. And everybody's gonna find their own route, but my route was that if I was gonna become incarcerated for cannabis, it would be a lot easier to stomach if I actually was a man of compassion, helping people instead of thinking of myself.
You know, I want to get into that a little bit and talk about your marijuana miracles, and you've been there several years now, but if you don't mind talking about it, I mean, don't you have family there? I remember you have some that are kind of hostile and some that are very supportive, and both you and Tawny have roots that go way back in that area, don't you?
Yeah, well, Tawny more than I, actually, here in Trinity County. Yeah, we live, down the road from quite a bit of her family. And no offense to them. Everybody's got their own view on things. And some are supportive, some aren't. But, yeah, you go a few mountain ranges north of here, roughly 100 miles to a county very similar to this one, truly, I say to people all the time, the best thing I love about Weaverville and Trinity County is that it's the closest thing to Siskiyou County that's not Siskiyou County. So I grew up a little north here, so the roots go back a ways.
I was up there a couple of years ago, and it reminded me a lot of where my family's from, up in the hills. It looked to me like it was very close-knit and very tight up there, very close relationships. You've been growing up there for how long now? 3 or 4 years where
you
are?
Yeah, about 6 actually now.
About 6?
We've been doing the full-time collective thing for probably about 3 roughly. But we've been up here, doing the growing for 6. We're pretty much taking care of ourselves and family before that. And
didn't I see that you were on a committee up there is that a county committee that you're a member of?
Absolutely. And part of that is that a lot of people, especially in the city, you know, they don't really stop to consider where the medicine comes from, what the supply chain looks like, whether there's any integrity in it, So up here in the Triangle, Mendocino counties went through it and worked some of the issues out. Humboldt County has, Trinity County's always been behind the curve, and we're a really small county, 13,000-14,000 people. We don't even have a traffic light in the county, and so it's sort of been a place where people have come and thought they could pretty much do. It's like the vacation mentality, you know, let's go out to the lake, get drunk and get crazy and, you know, hell with the natives. And it's really caused a lot of problems. And so they put together a committee of citizens and growers, people involved in medical marijuana, to try to come up with a solution for how we could, you know, let people have compassion, have collectives, grow medical marijuana, but do it in a way that doesn't ignore the rights of their neighbors. And we made some suggestions, and they were ultimately not approved by the board. So the can got kicked down the road. Another season or two went by, and the problems become worse, and to the point that now we're actually under a growing moratorium for this summer. I think, according to our property size, we're going to be limited to 250 square foot of canopy.
Is that less than you had before?
Yeah, about 1,500 square feet less, for sure.
Oh, my God. What are you going to do?
Well, we're going to comply because the truth is, at the last Planning Commission meeting the other night, one of the things we've decided, I've been a part of that process, and one of the things we've decided as a community, giving public testimony and the Planning Commissioners themselves making decisions based on that testimony, is that this aggregate growing ordinance that they're trying to craft to sort of settle these issues of how a commercial cannabis production ought to look, that when they made the determination that they believe that if you're going to grow cannabis commercially for either dispensaries or for other patients and do it more than just for yourself or your family, that you need to be on a piece of land zoned agriculture 30 acres or bigger. Well, this is all happening in a very quick rate of speed. And so even though there's arguments that can be made that the growing of marijuana is not even a legal activity based on federal law, certain courts and decisions have ruled that it's not the job of the state or the county government to try to enforce federal law. So based on the exclusions of the medical marijuana law, they feel like that under land use they have a right to say where it ought to be. Just like I don't have the right to start a pig farm, on any piece of ground I want, despite, my neighbors and proximity to neighbors, schools, anything like that. But because it's happening so fast, they realize that technically and fairly speaking, they've allowed places like Grace Farms to exist. And we've been a good neighbor growers. We've been part of the community, not just a carpetbagger that comes to the community to get theirs. That even though we're going to be on a piece of property not zoned for it, we ought to be able to have a grandfathered sunset deal where we have a couple of years to locate a new piece of property and comply.
Well, so is your situation now that you don't have 30 acres or it's not zoned agricultural?
It's not zoned and we don't have 30 acres. But the thing they decided that I was getting to, and I don't mean to like sail so far around the horn, but to give you a background so we know what we're talking about. This moratorium that we're under now, it was decided at the Planning Commission meeting the other night that one of the criteria for being able to get the variance, the so-called grandfather clause, permit for 2 years is that you obey the moratorium. If you're caught violating the moratorium, you've disqualified yourself from the good neighbor grandfather clause. And we can't afford to do that. We can't afford to, we're better off producing 250 square feet and at least trying to help the most needy patients that belong to Grace Farm than to put ourselves in a position where we can't even exist as a farm.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to think of what the impact on the operation, your operation, as I understood it, might be. I know you recently had a lot of or a good bit of publicity. You were in the L.A. Times a couple of years ago and on G4 on 420 on the attack of the show, as I recall. And you also have a video on Facebook that you made, I guess, for you were hoping to get a reality TV show. So I with all that publicity, I don't see how you could get by with anything. I noticed also, you deliver throughout the state once a month, or you were, and you had reduced, I believe, your allotment, as you call it, to like 125 an ounce or so. Is this new restriction going to, how's that going to impact you, that as far as your deliveries throughout the state. Are you going to change any of that?
No, I don't really, excuse me, I don't think so, because, you know, one of the things that we do, one of the ways that we process, we don't really do it all at one time. And so generally speaking, usually it's almost fall before we've actually dispensed everything from the year before. You know, we have a process that keeps it in excellent shape. And so the real concern is for next year, you know, is for after this season and through the winter. And, you know, we sort of hope that what we can do is, and I'm not trying to be unkind, but because it's such a difficult issue, this whole cannabis thing and how it ought to look, and I don't mean to get off the point of what you're trying to get at, but it's sort of pertinent in that with so many people that have come to our state from anywhere, pick a state, and decided, you know, that they're going to jump into the game, it's been a race to the bottom on quality and price. And I'm all about freedom. I'm all about, I hate the prohibition of marijuana. I abhor it. It is so astonishing to me that we've bankrupted every possible municipality and people still don't see it. But at the same time, this is the second time around. I hear people talk about you know, Dennis Perone, the father of medical marijuana, and, you know, that's great. I love to give Dennis his due, man of courage. But Bob Randall was the first legal medical marijuana patient in this country, and I believe it was 1979 we had, you know, 13 medical states or something like that, 16 more pending legislation. We've been through this before and lost it. And so when we have this Wild West show in the Emerald Triangle where everybody's, you know, trying to get theirs, it just gives medical marijuana and the people that are doing it right such a black eye that this hill is getting really steep. But having said that, if they're, I mean, I know of people that are selling wholesale now for like $1,000 a pound. Certainly, if I have to go see some of those people to take care of our patients, they'll just have to know that, you know, I'm not guaranteeing the source, and I'm certainly not, you know, I'm just trying to survive and help everybody to get what they need.
Well, that sounds like quite a drop to me. I haven't paid that much attention to what the prices are in the dispensaries, but I don't know that that reduction in cost is being passed on to the by the dispensaries. I think prices have come down a little. Have you noticed that? Because that
Yeah, well, it's getting better. I don't really frequent dispensaries, so I don't know. But I was just in Sacramento this last weekend. I got back. Well, I was just there for a day. Paul and I ran down there to sign up a patient and also to move some stuff out of storage, but while I was there, I picked up one of the, you know, local little entertainment rags that's real popular. And I mean, there was almost not a page that didn't have some sort of a dispensary ad. And I'm all for the access. I'm all for that. But again, excuse me. And I know a lot of people are going to complain and they're going to say, oh, geez, you know, listen to that guy, you know, wet blanket. But here's the thing. With all of this fancy marketing and all of these gimmicks and stuff that you read and all of this competition, you know, they're bringing some prices down and stuff, but at what price? It makes it look to people not in the scene, it makes it look like a circus, because when they read that it's supposed to be just reimbursement for your cost of production and your labor and all of that, certainly how is that a moving target, like all of the gimmicks and all of the, you know, the little specials and this and that and the other thing? I'm not downing anybody. I'm just questioning what message are we trying to send. And I say that because I live in a hotbed county, and I'm a community advocate as well, and I'm respected by the citizens of this community that don't produce because I'm reasonable and I don't defend or rationalize bad behavior.
Well, I don't know quite how to respond to that. When you were talking, what I was thinking about is that One of the things that I'm concerned about for people who do use the dispensaries is that they have a choice and not be tied to one so that they can price shop, especially poor people. And so, you know, if it's the people who are medical patients who are needy, who are on disability, who are going for those specials, and if that's who they're who the specials are targeting, I think that's, you know, I don't know that I have a problem with that. I can understand your concern for image. You know, there's a, you know, I, what I want to do is there's a call-in number here if someone wants to call in. We're broadcasting on FM 101.1 tonight, and we're also streaming on the internet. The call-in number, we got another call-in number. It's 831-469-3119. If you've got some questions for me or Mike or want to talk about any of the topics we're talking about, let's see where we can go from here, Mike. I can think of a lot of things I want to talk about with you. you were going to have some classes. How is that going? You want to talk about that?
Yeah, actually, it's really, really going well. We're getting all of the stuff ready. We've got the actually sort of jumped the gun a little bit, you know, putting it on the website. And with the two-tiered thing, we had a three-day and a four-day, taking up a whole week. And we sort of took booking sufficient enough to get through that period but not be overwhelmed. And we just switched it to a three-night, four-day deal one time a week this summer, where we'll be taking patients at Grace Farms to learn on a working farm hands-on how to produce your own medicine. No tricks, no holding anything back. If people think we can produce pretty good medicine, we can certainly show you how we do it.
As I recall, was it your granddaddy Purple that tested at 22% THC? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our predominant strain. We're still working with that. As a matter of fact, actually, yeah, that's right. My wife was just sitting there shaking her head. What are you saying? Now, it's not granddaddy. It's called a royal purple. It's like granddaddy, only we like it better. But actually, I was just a month ago in, or not, maybe less, in L.A., and I got to meet DJ Short, and I spent a little time with him in a class, and I picked up some blueberry. And one of the things I'm looking forward to is this Royal is a really, really great medication for body pain and appetite, and it's a super, super great strain. We love it, but I don't have any C. I don't have any way to retain it if I was to lose my mother. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to germinate the blueberry seeds, take a male, and he said his blueberry male is a pretty prolific father and around. But so he doesn't mind as long as he gets credit. But anyway, I'm going to take that blueberry male and I'm going to put it to the Royal Purple. And hope to give it maybe just a little bit more legs stature-wise and maybe just a little bit of twist on that purple flavor that it's got. So we're going to do a little experimenting.
Well, you know, something did just occur to me. You said you're going to have to cut your canopy from, did you say, 1,500 feet down to 250?
Yeah, well, from about 1,700 down to 250.
Okay, in other words, 1,500 less.
Yeah.
So you were telling me, I seem to recall you said you needed, are you going to be able to take on any more patients in your collective, or are you at capacity because of that?
Well, it's really hard to say right now. One of the things that we're going to do, and it's sort of a little twist on, you know, the way things have went here in the county, short of having to do all kinds of crazy stuff with crazy permits and stuff, and I've talked to the planning department about it, it's always been the right of this farm to have its members as guests here. We actually have a three-bedroom little place that is on the farm that we put people up in. And so what we do is we require people to be a member of the farm to participate in the school this summer. And you can be a non-medical or a You don't have to receive allotments of medication. You don't have to be a qualified patient to be a member. You can be a non-qualified patient for the purposes of the school, because as a farm member, you know, you just have a right to be here. So it's not like we have to go through all kinds of regulatory process to have people here for education.
And you got a website, is that correct?
We do. It's gracefarmonline.org.
Anybody that's listening, you can check that out. They've got photographs of the farm. The last time I looked, I think you had the schedule for the classes.
Right. And I'm really sure, Craig, that we're going to be able to take care of patients and sign up new members, because a lot of farms around here, people that are reputable farms that deal with like groups like veterans. I know this one guy that it's all he does. It's a bunch of Vietnam guys. And I've always made the Royal Kush, the Purple Kush, available to those guys. And so I'm going to be able to get some of it back in a way that allows me to make it available to our patients for the same allotment that we've gotten down to.
I seem to recall that SB 420 used to have a section that allowed one collective to supply another, which may or may not impact you. I know you were also you were hoping to be on reality TV, and I believe you Well, I know you were talking quite a bit about your marijuana miracles.
Yeah, it's funny. I love that because you know what I'm talking about. But, it started out actually from that that same L.A. Times article. I got a call from a guy who does producing down in L.A. He's actually on a really popular big show. But his day job is finding interesting stories and producing his own content. So he got a hold of me and... Excuse me, I had to take a little drink there.
Yeah, you do when you talk a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, so he got a hold of me, and I coordinated one of my trips to L.A. to meet with him, and he really liked the idea that, you know, I started watching Weeds. I was excited about that show. I thought, this is going to be so great. And he, despite some of the things that in the first season or two that were completely ridiculous, like the scissors they had on the wall for trimming and, some other things, it was a pretty good show. But then it turned into this totally stupid show that, you know, I've never watched again. And there needs to be a show on TV that educates people about medical marijuana, the people that produce it, the patients that use it, so that they can see that all of this fear is just unfounded. It's really unfounded. And Steve's behind the idea. We just recently hooked up with the guy who was the two-time reality show of the year producer, who's agreed to help the project along. And where it's at, I don't know, but it's moving forward. Will we do it? I don't know. Will it lead to my arrest? I don't know. But it's worth a shot because, you know, all the fear about marijuana, that's probably the single most effective thing the United States government has done. If they get an A-plus in anything, it's the propaganda, a smear campaign against cannabis hemp, against marijuana. That people are so afraid and for no good reason. And so what we really need to do is educate them so everybody that they know that's currently using it but doesn't let them know can come out of the closet and say it's okay now.
Yeah, I see it as a 70 years or longer violation of the First Amendment, a propaganda campaign. I mean, personally, I think they ought to be raiding nuclear power plants and putting the people that foisted them on us in jail. And That just really illustrates to me how ridiculous it all is. Of course, you know, you're preaching to the choir when you're talking to me.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. People scoff and they laugh, but when you really walk yourself through it, the prohibition of cannabis especially, but I'll go a step further and say drugs, is the biggest civil rights issue of our day. And everybody's walking around like nothing to see here, folks. It's astonishing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know how to describe all the ways it impacts people's lives. It violates almost every one of the Bill of Rights, you shouldn't have to go to jail for growing a plant. It's your right to grow a plant. Listening to Dale Geringer the other day, and he was talking about he thought it should be taxed like herbs, like herbal remedies. They're not remedies because it's illegal to make any medical claims. I really haven't thought that through, but that sort of concerns me. If that should be where this movement goes, then does that mean that you're not going to be able to make medical claims on it, and it is going to have to be taxed? I don't know if I want to get into all that right now. I've spent a lot of time on previous shows talking about Normal and where they're going.
Hey, how about this? How about if you want to talk about that, you can think about it for a minute, because we'll back up, because I really want to tell everybody about the weed miracles, because that puts a smile on my face, it put a smile on your face, and I think it'll put a smile on their face. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And don't you have a video of some of these on? Is it on Facebook? Is that where it is?
Yeah, no. The clip that I have is the clip that Steve produced, and you know, most of it is all total reality. There's a little clip in there, you know, where he wanted me to recreate this incident where we had some guys try to steal from our farm summer before last, and you know, they fired like a weapon at me and stuff, and so that part we did, but everything else on there is and I don't think there's any weed miracles on there, but I think I talk about we're on our way to do one or something. But anyway, basically here's a weed miracle. Never in 35 years did anybody ever really give me anything weed-wise more than, you know, a few dollars worth. A joint, here, man, go ahead, here, smoke that. And when I had the epiphany that said, I'm so lucky, I can't believe, I live in California, I can grow this weed, and there's so many people that can't. And in the process of being able to do that, the first year that we were here, her cousin's husband was supposed to be taking care of this group of plants for us. And, well, to make a long story short, you know, there was, like, a problem with the mule, and some didn't get watered, and, you know, I ended up with, like, three, and two of them were males. I got, like, a quarter pound. So we were pretty hard up for meds most of the winter. And so her aunt was feeling like, you know, giving us bags of roaches was, you know, like treating us pretty good, and that sort of weighed on me. And then I, you know, also, like I said, had the epiphany about, you know, being so lucky and I'd met Jacqueline. And so it occurred to me that, you know what, I really have to, like, you know, like almost spit in the eye of weed being worth money and find ways to give it to people who are going to appreciate it. And so whenever I can identify someone who I think is, like, really working for the movement, working for the cause, or somebody who's really in a spot where they could use some grace, I put together anywhere, you know, from a quarter to maybe a half a pound, as much as I can, and then I seek that person out, and then I just give it to them. And the miracle is seeing the look on their face when you just gave them, like, 4 months' worth of medicine, and they're not even going to have to, like, worry about that for 4 months. That is an amazing thing. It's an awesome thing. It's almost going to make me kind of break down a little bit talking about it, because, see, that's the value of weed. is that it can change people's lives for the better, not monetarily. They can, like, live through things. They can live through pain. They can live through depression. It helps so many things, but it's so expensive.
Well, yeah, and you know what I found myself going through before I became a benefactor of Grace Farms is I would go through a binge-purge cycle. In other words, I didn't have enough to get through the month, so I do without for the last week. And then my the levels, I could feel the levels in my systems falling, and the level of cannabis in my system, I could feel it falling. And by the end of the week, I was so far down that when I got some, I would have to essentially smoke more to get my levels back up than if I had been able to have as much as I wanted all along, if you understand what I'm talking about. And so I was going through not having any for the last week of the month, and then having to smoke much more for that week when I could afford it than I would have had to recover the levels.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, you know what, it's so sad, because it would grow everywhere if we let it. It would just grow on its own. It might not have bag appeal,
yeah,
but it would grow.
Yeah, and, you know, most people don't realize that seriously ill patients need four. What's the most that anyone you know are associated with requires? I would guess 4 ounces. You would have people that would need 4 or 6 ounces a month.
Easily, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty easy. Some a little more and you know, some less. It depends.
And I think most people don't realize this. And when you're talking about $300 an ounce or $200 an ounce, or even you know, less than that, if they need a lot and they're on disability, they simply can't afford it. And yet, if they take the pharmaceuticals that they would have to take if they don't have the marijuana, then they get screwed up. It's just so,
yeah, I know, and I wish we could just make it as common as aspirin. I really do, because you know, I'm fighting to try to get it down as much as we can, but you know, we're up against a few other issues ourselves. You know, we have to try to be able to survive. But one of the things I want to say about a weed miracle is that, you know, everybody that joins Grace Farms as a member that pays an allotment fee for the meds that they get, they do that knowing up front that I do the weed miracles, that they're helping to make that happen. They may not be able to be there, but as being a supporting member of Grace Farms, they're actually driving that program and helping us do that.
Yeah, and I know that I've met a number of people that have been recipients of your weed miracles, your marijuana miracles. You want to talk about that some more? Was that going to be part of the reality TV show? Are you going to continue with this?
Well, you know, that was my idea, and you know, the thing was, you know, they've got a little bit different idea, which is okay. I think that, you know, if somebody wants to give me a stump to stand on, I'm not really going to complain about whether it's oak, pine. If it's got an inch of pitch on it, I'll stand right in it. I think one aspect of it that might really turn out well is if people believe in our idea of a live-in, you know, hands-on vocation vacation. Come here, let people who are, you know, already doing it show you how they do it intensely over 3 days. We're not going to talk politics here. We're not going to talk about history. We're not going to try to teach anybody the law, because in California, you can ask 3 cannabis lawyers one question and get 6 answers. So we're not going to presume to do that. We're just going to teach what we know. And if that's a successful endeavor, because we're not going to do that as part of the, offshoot of the farm that's going to be for profit. If we can do that to support ourselves instead of have to get a paycheck for doing the work to produce the meds, then we're going to be able to knock that down even further, almost to weed miracle price for everybody that belongs to the farm. Hmm. So that's the benefit that we see of you know, the school working out. And one of the things that we think we have an advantage of is that, number one, we are a working farm. Number two, we're in the heart of the Emerald Triangle. Number three, if you wanted to do something like this yourself, you're going to be on a piece of property pretty much just like ours, possibly. So that's going to be advantageous just to be here. Number four, we have atmosphere. You're going to get fed. You're going to have complementary medication. We have a swimming hole. We have a lot of atmosphere. And so I hope it's going to be a success, and I think it will. And if it is, the weed miracles are going to be like a common thing.
Well, that's great to hear. Well, I had a question I wanted to ask you, and I got caught up in listening to you, and I'm waiting for it to come back to my mind here. You know, it's 6:40. This is Canada. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. This is the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. I've got Mike Booten as my guest on the air. He's Grace Farms up in Trinity County. He and his wife Tawny. I guess Tawny's going to be teaching the classes. Is that correct?
Yeah, she'll teach some. You know, because I know this is going to be a controversial name. But she was actually told by Joe Pietri that she's a world class hash maker, and I believe that's true. And so she's definitely going to be the hash master teacher. I will teach a lot myself, and so definitely, yeah, we're going to break it up between who has the expertise, and apart from that, you know, when I have to make lunch, somebody's going to have to be on it.
So you want to tell us who Joe Pietri is? He has a patent on the ice separation method, is that
correct?
Yeah,
well, I think it's Reinhardt actually does. Has it, but he's a supporter and friend of his. Joe's a guy who grew up in Brooklyn, like many of us, you know, started using. You know, pretty soon you're going to get some for your friends and reduce the price of your own. Everybody knows the routine. And one thing led to another. Joe ended up being a guy who was an international hashish smuggler, you know, in Lebanon and Kashmir, Nepal. And ended up writing a book called The King of Nepal. It's a really good read.
Yeah, I read it.
Has a lot of opinions about cannabis, but when it comes to hash, he knows his, he totally knows what he's talking about.
Well, yeah, I guess that was the point, is that if he's saying that Tawny is good, then she must be. I must admit I've had some, and it's quite nice, along with the purple. And what why don't you tell us about what you have there? I know you've got... tincture and you have hash for those that need it, and you've several strains. Are you going to be having a set number of strains that you produce?
Well, I think we are. We've really kind of. That's a kind of an interesting question, and you know, I guess I sort of hesitate to answer because, man, I just don't want to keep coming off with all kinds of stuff about the scene. But one of the things that I find about offensive about the scene is the strains, is that let's say that, you know, you live in Santa Cruz right now and you're going to a dispensary there and you've got a certain strain that's really working for you, and then you move to Mount Shasta, maybe because... for whatever reason, and you go to the dispensary there, you go to the dispensary in Redding, and you want that Egg McMuffin like you used to get back in Santa Cruz, and they say, yeah, here you go, and then that same $300 that you're talking about that you have to work so hard for to give up ends up not even giving you an Egg McMuffin. It's like a piece of toast sopped with bacon grease, you know? I mean...
Oh yeah, I know. I ran into that here.
You know what I mean
here.
About the strains and the names, and so what we.
Well, I always smell it. It's my nose knows. You know, and I've had to buy something just to have something, which I knew wouldn't work. I could smell it. I knew that it, you know, I'd end up smoking an eighth and not really get what I was going for.
Right, right. And that's disappointing and depressing. So, you know, what we're trying to do, we experimented around a little bit here and there. We've sort of landed on a few strains that we've found to just be really, really good for certain common types of problems, and we pretty much stick to that. We've got the Royal Purple Indica, which is, like you said, the 22%. It's very narcotic.
22% THC.
Good for appetite. Excuse me. Pure Kush, which we call the Grace Kush, is like a lime OG, and it's more of a, you have the creativity more, it's more the happy weed, the good for depression. And then we also have a little, one of our members gave me some beans that I sprouted up, and it was supposed to be what he said, it was purple Afghani Kush. And so when I ended up actually flowering it out, it didn't appear to be any of that. But it does have a cherry aftertaste, and it made me cough like hell, so I call it cherry cough. So that's about some of the ones that we mostly have right now, although these beans I got from DJ Short, I'm going to start putting to work pretty soon.
Okay, and then also tinctures and hash, I guess, from these strains, and... Do you have any other applications, like any topical applications or?
Yeah, we don't really do a lot of that, because there's so many people out there doing that kind of thing, and so really the short answer is no.
Okay, so mainly interested in is providing cannabis to patients perhaps who are low income throughout the state who need it, and you intend to continue to deliver for once a month throughout the state?
Yes, as much as we can. Sometimes it's 5 weeks, but generally speaking it's 4 to 5 weeks, and for people that can plan ahead, you know, I don't know what you're paying now, but $125 is about as low as we can get it and drag it all over the state for you.
Well, yeah, that seems pretty more than reasonable to me. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, the gas alone is rather expensive. And even if you, I don't know what to say about that. It's cheap. Cheap compared to any price that I know of anywhere.
Right. And, well, you know, I mean, we're trying to do the best that we can, and we ended up with some people going away for various reasons, and you know, God bless them. They helped us out while they were here, but there's so much temptation, you know, out there to be part of something that's, you know, really changing people's lives, the people involved on the production side.
So
it's
you're
hard
talking
to get people to see the vision, to see that, you know, come on. I mean, this plant was put here for a reason, and I think to, you know, desecrate it by making it, you know, yourself and money more important than the people you could be helping is a big mistake, but I don't know.
Well, you got to pay the bills, too.
What's that?
I said you got to pay the bills, too.
Yeah. No, I know, but what I mean is it's hard to get, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just rambling now, but it's hard to get people to see the vision and come and you know, when my wife and I are, you know, only making like 5 bills a week, you know, that's like entry-level wages, not even in the city. It's not even entry-level wages. So when you have people that want to come and make 50, 60 grand a year, it's hard to find help way out here, you know, that see the vision and see that, you know, this isn't about making money. It's about helping people.
I understand what you're talking about. So in other words, you've had some people up there that were working, helping you, but they left, I guess, because they were looking for bigger money. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And it's hard to keep them, you know, out here. And so, I mean, I didn't mean to get off on that. What I was kind of sort of explaining how we got kind of pared down, and, we realized that, you know, once we got to that level and started doing the math that, hey, wait a minute, you know, we can bring it down even a little bit more, and so we did.
Oh, I see. Because you
really, that's what I meant when I said, you know, about, you know, these specials at the dispensaries. I'd be happy to have those guys, you know, helping low-income people, and I'm not downing them. What I'm saying is that when I'm politically involved with trying to advocate for medical cannabis, and I have people who aren't users and who are, you know, trying to be involved in the curtailing of it, and I'm trying to educate them, and they have questions, it's hard for me to defend some of the things that they want to know. Like when they say, well, I thought that the law only allowed for you to recoup your expenses, and so how can you, like, run a two-for-one special? Did you cut your expenses in half? How do I answer that?
Oh, I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind when you say that is first of all, nowhere in Proposition 215 does it say that distribution has to be nonprofit. That was a decision by a Supreme Court judge in Lundgren et al. Versus Dennis Perone. And at the time that Proposition 215 was passed, the campaign headquarters for the club was in the first floor. The campaign headquarters for Proposition 215 was in the first floor of the San Francisco Cannabis Buyers Club. They had compassion bag days. I think it was on Thursday the afternoon at 2. You stood in line. They gave you a compassion bag. They had specials. They had 20,000 or so members in the club. And so when they raided Dennis Perone, I think it was in August before the election in 1996, and then when he went to trial, somehow the Supreme Court judge, did not take into account the fact that the model that the people who wrote Proposition 215 had in mind was the San Francisco Cannabis Buyers Club. It was also included... not just when I talk about the model they had in mind, of course, that meant various growers growing for medical patients and also included people like yourself and Roger Minch and you know, people with a little land growing a few plants. I don't know. I don't consider 250 square foot of canopy to be all that large. How many plants does that work out to?
That's a good question, because you know what? I think that when it comes to cannabis, the larger the hole in width, the better. And so generally speaking, we go about 6x6, but let's just say you went 5x5. That's 25 square feet, so that's about 10 outdoor plants.
You're saying that 250 is about 10 outdoor plants. That's
correct.
What you're saying. Yeah, 250 square feet. No, that doesn't. You know, I was part of a collective in Temecula, and they had, I think, 30-something plants in the backyard with four people. But that's not that many plants.
Oh, no, that's pretty reasonable, really, because, see, I'm really not for plant limits anyway, and that's one of the things we sort of ironed out here, you know, because, one thing I left untied was that I was getting to, I guess sometimes I take too long to get to a point, but the thing about the reduction of the expenses, I had to reflect that also in the reduction to the patients, or... You know, I can't really claim that I'm operating non-profit, and whether or not that's what they intended, that's sure the standard now if you want to, like, you know, be considered legitimate.
Well, yeah, but the fact is that non-profit, you can put, non-profit is a sort of a legal fiction the way I see it. Basically, the profit is recategorized into salaries. A lot of non-profit organizations actually make tremendous profits. They put it back into equipment.
But that's a matter of semantics, though, in my view, because I wouldn't call that a profit any more than I would say that the 500, the 24 or whatever, 25 grand I take for a salary over the course of working every day of the year, I don't think that's a profit either. I mean, nobody calls their paycheck a profit. Mm. So, I just don't, it's a different word. It, you know, if you put something back in that you, you know, look at the Red Cross. I mean, how far have they come from, you know, like a little wagon with the, some paint on the, you know, from the Civil War battlefield.
Yeah, well, when you talk about the Red Cross, I lived in San Francisco in 96, and I remember that they evidently sort of cheated the city. Art Agnos filed a suit against them, as I recall, and there was discovery. There was something like $52 million that was donated for earthquake relief, and they only gave San Francisco 12 of it, and at first they lied and said they didn't get $52
million. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not speaking to their integrity. I was just speaking to the fact that a nonprofit can grow itself.
Oh, yeah.
But, but back to the plants for a minute. You know, one of the things we've wrestled with here is that whole, you know, plant count. And finally, I mean, and I asked Chris, and I maybe didn't get the email, and I know he's a busy guy, but, you know, I wanted him to come up and talk to people here, you know, in this process about canopy, because I think the plant count is an invitation to try to get the most you can out of each plant. And I don't think that quantity is the measure of good medicine. And so I think that canopy is a better way to actually, if you're going to regulate the production of cannabis, and California is going to, if anybody's not paying attention, the land use law is the tack they're taking, and it's going to be a successful tack. So there's going to be the regulation of cannabis production, and square footage is a lot better way to go because, you know, some of the best medicine is like the best peppers. They're really, really small but powerful.
Yeah.
And so plant count discourages producers from being able to, you know, most producers don't want to give up a two-pound plant for a plant that's going to produce a half a pound of really, really crazy good meds for just a certain condition.
Yeah, and they come in all shapes and sizes.
Right. Right, absolutely.
I've seen like, 10 or 15 different varieties growing in a garden. Some are small and squat, and some are huge, and they have different shapes, and some just naturally only grow a couple of feet high.
Yeah, yeah, and you know what? They've all got their, you know, their pros and their cons, and so, man, I guess my biggest thing is if I'd want people to understand, you know, the where, you know, a lot of the critique of the scene comes from is that, you know, I'm really, really scared that we're going to go backwards and that people are going to get hurt even worse than before. Montana just tried to repeal the medical marijuana law there, and the governor said no. God bless him, smart guy. But I'm really concerned that that the Circus Act that represents a lot of what goes on in our state is just really, really... let me put it to you this way. I started a new program here in Trinity County. I announced it in the Trinity Journal that I would give farm tours to interested citizens who want to gain understanding and knowledge. A couple of ladies from the school district were here today, and we sat around, and I took them on a little tour, and it was a really, really good thing. And so, you know, and what they told me was that in the process of these public meetings that we've been attending to try to get a grasp on this issue, they feel really bad for me because they said for every minute that some of the other cannabis people in our county testify publicly, I need to testify for 4 minutes just to undo the damage.
Well, you know, that sounds...
And it's sad. Well, and I'm afraid we're losing, and I'm afraid that just like back in the 70s, a little bad behavior is going to take a good thing and allow the big bad wolf to come and blow it down again.
I wonder how many people out there know that marijuana was actually legal in the 70s. I'm trying to remember what year Timothy Leary won that suit against the Great Supreme Court. It was... He had the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 declared unconstitutional because it required him to violate the Fifth Amendment. That is, it required self-incrimination.
Payment. Right, right. And so there was a period of time where there was no federal prohibition of cannabis. You're right.
And
it must have been pre-70 then, right? I feel kind of bad that I don't know. because it was in the Controlled Substance Act, the replacement for the debunked 1937 Marijuana Tax Act.
Yeah, I could look it up, but I would be giving dead air here while I try to type it into the computer. I got my computer here. I think it was 1969, and then it was like 6 or 8 months later they passed the Controlled Substances Act.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it sounds to me like you might be referring to Keith Stroop and Normal mentioning an indiscretion of Born, I believe it was, in the Carter administration. I know we thought we were going to have legalization about 1973 or so.
Right.
Our decriminalization of marijuana, anyway. And they were spraying paraquat, and evidently Keith Stroop of Normal was upset about that. And so he... Oh, they had a party, and we're snorting coke.
yeah, it's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I'm concerned about that. Now, I do not like associating cannabis with alcohol in any form of fashion. I don't like talking about regulating it that way, because the fact is that when you look at pharmaceuticals, it's one of my big issues. What happened to me is that I took antidepressants, SSRIs, for a situational depression, and they ended up flipping out on them. It was just horrible to describe. There's a person, Gwen Olson, who tells my story, essentially. She was a drug rep for major pharmaceuticals, and she took Prozac, I think, for situational depression, and ended up... having manic psychosis, and I really don't want to go into it, but it's quite horrible, and it's physical and it's mental, and they're addictive and they have side effects. People kill themselves. Every single school shooter, I think, of the last 7 or 12 or however many there have been, were taking some form of SSRI. That's a selective serotonin uptake inhibitor. My point being, the pharmaceuticals are far more dangerous. And if you listen to or watch these commercials, on, I don't have a TV, but every once in a while I'll be watching something on my computer, and a commercial will come up for these pharmaceuticals. And I just sit there and go, my God, how could anybody take this stuff? You listen to these side effects. And cannabis has none of these. It makes you hungry.
yeah, or fall asleep.
You can't overdose. If you try, you'll fall asleep. The only way I think you could possibly overdose on cannabis is to administer it as Andrea Barthwell recommended, which is in a suppository.
Well, I don't know, but what I read was that you would have to, like, consume, I think, 1,200 pounds in 45 minutes. I'm a pretty big eater, but I don't think I could do that.
And it also does seem to me, I almost hesitate to say this in public, but it does seem to me that people who don't need cannabis don't like it. If they don't need it for a medical reason, it seems to me they don't like it. I've had many people tell me, you know, they tried it, you know, they didn't like it. And I do think that if anybody continues to use it for more than a couple of years of experimentation, that they're using it for some medical reason. I really do believe that.
Yeah, I really do too. But you know, one of the things that I believe about it is, and I have this premise that maybe I'm going to prove someday. But I really believe we're supposed to be using it. And the fact is, I think that we could probably graph and chart most of the problems that we've grown for ourselves over the last 70 years. I'd almost bet you could like chart the rise and incidence of all of these things. Along with the prohibition, it's all a result of that in one way or another. Because why else would we have a plant that can supply food, fuel, fiber, and medicine? It grows everywhere that man can live. It has no need for pesticides. It has no need for fertilizer. They've tried to wipe it out, but couldn't.
And it's good for radiation sickness.
Cannabinoid receptors. Is someone starting to see a pattern here?
Well, you know, I remember I was, and it was 89, I was talking, it was the San Francisco earthquake was 89, I think I said 96, that was the Proposition 215. When I was talking about Art Agnes and the Red Cross, that was the 89 earthquake. But anyway, when I was a member of the Cannabis Club, and that was in 96 in San Francisco, it was the first time somebody talked to me about the endocannabinoid system. And I just realized, of course, you have this entire system throughout your body. It's the healing system. It basically, cannabis is the fuel. And so most people, it sounds to me like you also believe that maybe a lot of people are suffering from a cannabis deficiency.
Totally.
I certainly think a lot of people could use a joint, and I'd love to give them one, but they're generally the ones that would never take it.
You want to hear something really amazing? I have, you know, Tawny, this wife, who's an amazing woman, and she's a big help. She loves peace. She loves marijuana.
You want to put her on the air?
She has a little bit of trouble with depression, and so she uses it. She's used some of the other stuff, which is poison, and at the same time, she went to this educational thing down in Humboldt County about how you can, without drugs, sort of minimize the effects of depression. They talked about exercise. They talked about diet. They talked about, you know, vitamin E from the sunlight, and they talked about contrast showers where you have, like, you know, as hot as you can stand and then as cold as you can stand. All of these things are supposed to, I don't know, like, snap you out of it. I don't really understand. But
did
anyway,
they mention electroshock therapy?
It's just water therapy, I guess. But maybe it shocks your system. I don't know. At any rate, the point I was getting at was when he was in the nutrition part, and it was the guy who does both hospitals down there on the coast and the nutritionist. And he started talking about all of this stuff and flaxseed this and fish oil that and omegas this and that and the other thing. And seeing as I'm an unabashed, unashamed cannabis advocate, there's no bad time to talk about cannabis and what it can do. And so I asked the guy, I said, hey, I wonder how hemp seed would, like, you know, fare against all of those things you just suggested. And he said, well, he goes, I don't know. And I said, well, let me help you out with that. And I explained to him how everything he just explained with all of these other substitute things could be replaced with the hemp seed because it has all the amino acids you need. It's the king of protein in the plant kingdom. It has the omegas in the perfect ratio. It's better for you than fish. So seriously, I cannot believe that a seed that can, that a pound of it can keep you alive for a week if you had nothing else to eat and you would lack for nothing. How is that not fuel for the human body?
Well, besides that, it's been medicinal. I don't know about the seed, but hemp certainly. I know that they've been a number of preparations have been made with hemp that are proving to have medicinal value, and evidently the high THC is not always the best thing for some conditions. We were talking about psychiatric conditions, depression, and other things, and you were talking about image and what people think and what you have to talk to people about, and that's one of the things that really, I guess that's one of the things that I harp on a lot, because for one thing, California is the only state where you can get a recommendation for a psychiatric condition, an exemption or whatever you want to call it. You can use medical marijuana legally, which means that, actually, I could probably claim that I use it for diabetes now.
Or itchy beard or...
I know that 60% of patients in California, according to surveys done by Dr. Todd McCurry and other doctors, I think McCurry's survey was 3,000 patients at the Cannabis Buyers Club, 60% use it for pain, 30%, the second largest demographic, use it for psychiatric conditions. And so what's left, the 10% that's left, are all the conditions that you hear about, cancer, cachexia, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, But the largest number of patients are using it for conditions that are not particularly visible. Pain is pain visible? Is psychiatric conditions? And then there's the idea that it's not supposed to make you better. In other words, if somebody looks healthy to me, that I think their medicine is working. I get very frustrated when I think about it, because it seems to me that we have this medical paradigm where medicine is not supposed to make you work. It's supposed to make you feel horrible, and it's supposed to have horrible side effects. It's a miracle if you get better. And whereas if you take something like cannabis, I've watched people with spasms, with various muscular problems, and they couldn't walk in the door, and they smoked a joint, and they're dancing and singing. And I don't suppose they look sick, but they certainly look sick coming in the door, you know.
Yeah, I know, and it's amazing, but it's that uphill battle, all that propaganda and all that misinformation, and then along with it, some bad behavior. And although, like, you know, I know that you believe, and I know others do, that all use is medical, and I believe that too, but it's a hard thing to sell when some of it actually isn't, because the person doesn't know it is, and they don't even intend it to be. You follow what I'm saying?
I know that I think the only reason that I tried to use cannabis medicinally was out of desperation. I didn't really believe it would work, but I thought I tried using it as medicine.
Yeah.
And it worked. You know?
Yeah, and it does. And here's the funny thing, and it's what I talk. As a matter of fact, I talked to the ladies about this very thing today. And I'm totally with you on the whole image thing, and you know, and I've suffered with the bad back for years and years and years, and that's one of those deals where people go, hey, you look like you're okay. I don't see any blood.
Yeah, you know, so I want to interrupt you.
Let's see. Where that was my first.
We were talking about your back, and in this video that you made for this reality TV show, you ride your bicycle off the roof. I don't think most people get that you have a severely bad back, and so the fact that you could do that.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It totally is. But what I was telling the ladies about today was this, is that, you know, when I talk about, and that's one of the best things cannabis does, I'm totally behind you with these medical marijuana laws that are being passed in states that exclude, like psychiatric conditions, if that's the word, or I sort of just refer to it as conditions of the mind, you know, versus conditions of the body. But cannabis in some people is being medicinal to them whether they know it or not, because they do have some problems, and it's mitigating those problems. And like, for example, today with the ladies, the way I explained it to him was, we were sitting out in the sun, we all had our sunglasses on, and I said, you know, it's kind of like this. When you've been, like, seared by whatever trauma, whether you were in war or you're like an abused woman or a child, you have this, it's almost like a sunburn.
You're talking about PTSD.
And it'd be kind of like, right now, if I pulled these glasses off, I can see clearly with them on, but if I pulled them off and looked into the sun, I can't take it. So I need these glasses to be able to, like, to function out here at the right level. And that's kind of how cannabis works. It's like sunscreen for your soul, like sunglasses for your perspective, that helps you and gives you the time to sort things out and still be functional, instead of taking pills that, like you said, I mean, are you kidding me? Like, those side effects are better than what I've got going on? Stop it.
I can tell you about the side effects.
I swear to do it all the time, and I forget. You should write down the names of the drugs they're pitching on TV right now as the new wonder drug, because in 5 years, they'll be the same names that they're asking you to get in on the class action lawsuit, because they killed people.
Right, you know, there was an article that came out, I think it was 1998, in a journal of the American, JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, perhaps. It said, don't take any drug that has not been on the market for at least 5 years because the side effects don't start to show up. And, you know, they had to conduct five clinical trials of Prozac to get two that indicated it might work better than a sugar pill. And so they didn't use those three. And now we find that Prozac generally doesn't work at all. You know, when you were talking about the image and all, there's also harm reduction, which people don't talk about very much. But the fact is that, or at least I believe, if you use cannabis in lieu of anything else, virtually anything else, then it's harm reduction. If it's rather than smoking a cigarette, the fact is, Dr. Tashkin, who is the government's foremost advocate of the idea that marijuana caused cancer, designed a study which was concluded in 2005 in UCLA, and the conclusion was that people who smoke marijuana are less likely to get cancer than people who smoke cigarettes. And so the prohibition on smoking in public, to me, you know, I need to smoke in public sometimes. I was Ryan Landers, who's an activist in Sacramento, points out that he's a lobbyist. He's been a lobbyist in Sacramento in the state capitol for years. He has to smoke in public. He couldn't function. And functionality is what we're after. I read an interesting comment in an article, which I can't remember where I read it. I read so much. But someone was talking about some patients may seem a little slow or maybe a little lethargic, but these people wouldn't be functional otherwise. You just don't understand that, you know, for some people to be functional is a vast improvement.
And, oh, totally. Yeah, and you know, all of these things are skewed anyway, though, because you know what? Everybody—that's one of the biggest. Man, I don't mean to be scattered either, but it just brought to mind the gateway lie. And the fact is that these things are so skewed that they're like gateway lie in essence, because people that use and people that have actual empirical evidence know that it's false.
Oh yeah, people have been able to eliminate or reduce their use of all sorts of pain medications with
marijuana. Absolutely. I mean, it's the lie.
It's the gateway out.
It's so vast, but guess what? It's all about corporate money, and I think everybody knows it. And that's the problem with the FDA, and that's the problem why we get these drugs so fast. That's the problem why we have lawsuits in 5 years. Why? Because there is no barrier between people going in and out of business and government back and forth.
Oh, absolutely. Monsanto and the drug companies own the FDA. And actually, Soros doubled down. Soros is one of the big funders of the marijuana organizations, Normal and the Drug Policy Alliance. I think he's on the board of drugs. He doubled down on Monsanto last year. Actually, though, the Soros Fund is no longer managed by George Soros. It's managed by his sons now. So I shouldn't say George Soros did, but his fund doubled down on Monsanto last year. And that just doesn't seem right to me. And I'm trying to figure out how the hell I got off on George Soros and Monsanto. Well, you're talking about the drug companies owning the government. And the fact is, yes, there's a Hollywood Today article, which I keep quoting. It was September the 29th, and I don't remember if it was 2008, perhaps. It was about Heath Ledger. And they point out that, I think in 2001, the top 10 drug companies on the Fortune 500 had profits in excess of the other 490 companies on the Fortune 500 combined.
That's a fact.
And that, you know, and these people, the drug companies don't pay taxes. They're not taxed. It costs $400 to license a pharmacy. And so it's very frustrating for me. In fact, one of the reasons I'm doing this show is because, or trying to do a radio show, is because it was just too much to write down. And I thought, well, I can talk about it for a couple of hours a week, and that's a lot easier than spending the entire week trying to write it all down.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun to talk about it anyway.
Well, it is when I have somebody to talk to. It's not all that much fun when you're sitting here for 2 hours trying to figure out what the hell you're going to say next.
Hey, you know what? You just brought up a good point that I want to, you know, make a point off of, and that was the idea that, you know, there's all this drugs and this and that and the other thing, and, you know, when it really all boils down to it, what are they doing? They're treating symptoms, aren't they? They're really not treating the root cause of people's illness. They're treating symptoms. So very much like that, the modern grow scene is sort of the same way. Because, see, that's one of the reasons why we're teaching growing at Grace Farms now live-in, you know, hands-on way, is because plants are very much like we are. It's just really not that complicated. And going naturally really brings out the power of the natural ability of the plant. It's amazing if when you get the right strain, it's not been bred to have bag appeal, or it's not been bred to have major THC that's not in proportion with the CBD and the other active components. When you have stuff that really works, let's see, where was I going with that? Oh, it when it's natural, it just brings out those qualities like never before. And so what we try to teach people is how to treat root causes of failure in growing for yourself instead of how to apply products or how to treat symptoms with products. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I know I didn't grow for that long, but I did manage to get a few crops in myself, and it seemed to me that the plants adjusted themselves to me over time. That may be a bit far-fetched, but it did seem to me that they kind of, over time, adjusted. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I don't know the mystery of it either. And you know, of course, one of these days, maybe we'll all, you know, get some really great research and stuff. But the fact of the matter is that somehow, you know, and people that build things or, you know, work with their hands will know what I'm talking about. But, you know, they came out with things like self-leveling caulk. Why? Because, you know, it's really hard to run a good line of caulking, you know what I mean, to make it look good.
Yeah, okay, I figured out what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you know, like say in your bathroom, little joints of your bathroom shower stall, right? If you needed some caulking in there to, you know, and you went in there to do it yourself, you'd find that it kind of looks like, you know, Nessie, you know, it's got like humps sticking up and it's not very uniform. So they came out with this self-leveling stuff. No matter, you know, what you do wrong, it levels itself out and looks good.
Uh-huh.
And I know that sounds obscure, but the truth is cannabis is like that. It's like that in the sense that I think one of the reasons that some people don't like it is because they don't really need it. And somehow it knows and seeks out what it is that it's supposed to be doing with you. And if that means that it takes away from the head effect, then so be it. It just does it. Mm-hmm. But if your body has no need for any, you know, effect, it somehow just all goes to your head. I don't know. I don't know that that's true, but it seems to be self-leveling in the sense that it'll find where it needs to go to work and do it.
Well, for anybody that wonders what this is and who we are, you're listening to Canada on Cannabis. I'm Craig Canada, your host. This is a show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. I'm talking to Mike Booten of Grace Farms up in Trinity County. They have a website. It's www.gracefarmsonline.org. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just, oh, sorry, I was drinking water. Yeah, it's Grace Farm Online. Grace. I use that Grace Farms kind of interchangeably, but it's actually Grace Farm.
No S on there.
No S.
And it's all one word.
Yes, .org.
Okay, and you're also on Facebook and so did you tell me where do you think you're going from here? Now you've got the growing classes, and you were talking about that, and that your point or your goal is not to teach people how to apply products to the plant so much as to I guess understand the plant, or is that, how would you put it?
Well, I would put it like this. I would say that if you're a serious medical patient who wants to grow serious medical cannabis for yourself, the best way to go is going to be naturally and organically, and we're going to show you how to do that and the benefits of doing that. We're going to teach you how to...
Is this indoor and outdoor?
Indoor and outdoor. Teach you how to the main pitfalls that people, the reasons people fail. I don't know that there's a conspiracy. I hear people talk about it. I don't know why it seems to be this way, but it seems to be this way for everybody. When I started trying to learn how to grow, of course, it seems like it should be an easy thing, and it's easy to get started. It's easy to spend money, but then it's also easy to, like, run into a problem, and all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, what do I do?
It's not that easy to grow.
And then before you get it handled, it, like, destroys your crop. And when it's taken you 4 months to get to that point, you know, and you got to start over, that's pretty devastating. So it's really more, and everybody gets books, everybody gets videos, and I've done the same thing, and never, you know, the best things I've learned were on the shoulders of other people, and things I've learned myself through trial and error and logic and reason, and basically we're going to pass all of those things on to people and show them how to, if they want to branch out from there to another way, they have the basic stuff down so that they know how to solve problems and not just apply products. I don't know if that was a very much better explanation.
Well, yeah, I was thinking when I was growing, there were lots of things you didn't know. For instance, it seems that the males understand when you're going to be leaving for a few days, and they pick those few days to flower and pollinate the whole grow.
Right. Yeah, well, no, there's just a lot of things, and there's things that, you know, people don't tell, and I don't know why. You know, there's things that are being taught that I really don't know any good reason for it. I mean, I'll give you one example. This is a tip that we teach here, and I'll just give you the basics, the particulars, you know.
I know where you're going.
Well, we teach this here. I learned it from Joe Pietri, who we talked about earlier about the hash. It was actually it's a 100-year-old gardening technique that was applied to cannabis about 12 years ago by Reinhardt. Now, it's not natural to veg a plant 24 hours under vegetative light. It's just not, because plants store energy during the day and then they use it at night.
Well, you know, and I wondered. I actually wondered if that would stress the plant, but go ahead.
It actually does.
Uh-huh.
And 18's not much better. There isn't, I don't know, maybe in L.A., but I don't really know a growing season anywhere that gets 18 hours of light in a day, maybe somewhere equatorial, but maybe I'm talking out of my butt. But here's the point. Is that the more you mirror like a natural thing, the better the plants seem to take. And they like it. And when I found out about the 12 plus 1, which is just vegging your plants for 12 hours, and then in the middle of the remaining 12-hour sleep schedule, putting 1 hour of light in between, very much like the 100 years ago they had carried the lantern through the greenhouse, it keeps them in the vegetative state, but it also gives them the rest they need. They're healthier. They produce as well. And you save 30 to 40% on your electrical costs. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, that's.
And why aren't people teaching that?
Well, I never heard of that. I'm trying to remember. I used a cycle. Maybe it was. It wasn't 24 hours, but I think I only, when I was growing, I only gave them like 3 or 4 or 6. I think it was 6 hours. I seem to remember 8 was some sort of magic number that if they got more than 8 hours of dark, I think, was what I was under the impression. If they got more than 8 hours of dark, then they would start to flower, is what I believe. And I really don't remember now exactly what cycle that I was using. It wasn't 1 hour of dark in the middle of light in the middle of the night, though. You know. So.
Yeah, well, it's a sound technique, and it actually works. And there's so many more advantages to it that I could talk about. But then you know what? I'd be giving it all away for free, wouldn't I? And you know, I make that as a joke, but truthfully, listen, if you're going to run, let's say you're going to run even 5 lights over the course of a year, that's 5,000 watts. That's going to be like running 5 heaters, mm-hmm. 5 little heaters. And go plug a heater into your wall and tell me how much that costs you a month. That's going to probably run you like 30, 40 bucks a month. Mm-hmm. So you're 400 times 12 if you're running it all year. And on these, I don't know, I'm speaking off the top of my head just for a rough example, but you know, you're talking about almost $5,000 right there in electricity. If you're going to cut that by a third, by say $1,500 or $1,600, what could you do with that money? Maybe you could put it in your gas tank and take those meds to somebody that needs it for the same price. I don't know.
You know, talking about the gas tank, somebody was wanted me to do a show on the industrial uses of hemp, and I'm not sure I could talk 2 hours about that, but there is also biodiesel. I guess the stalks would be good for that. I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know, but, you know, and I don't know that I could talk about, you know, the use of the hemp, but what I do know is this, is I was very surprised a few years ago when I was watching a TV news program, and I saw that Brazil was, they were like driving flex cars, flex fuel cars down there before I'd ever even heard of it for years. And it was because Brazil has almost completely removed themselves from this, boy, I sometimes want to just swear, but I know I'm on the radio, so I won't, but from this stupid oil standard. But they've done it with cane alcohol. And I think that, you know, certainly hemp alcohol, you know, would have to be superior to cane alcohol. No reason we couldn't do it here. There's really no reason to use oil, period. It's a, oh my word, I don't know if we want to get started on that.
Well, I had never heard of what do they call this oil? There's a theory that oil is not produced by organic matter, and I...
Yeah, I just heard that recently, too, that it's actually a natural occurrence.
From volcanic magma or something like that.
Yeah, too sure, but either way, I'm still not completely sold on it, and I'll tell you why. Because I am, for one, so sick to death of watching the evening news and seeing that somebody just like me who has hopes and dreams and children and family not get to come home from work. Why should it be that way? You know, there's nothing but death behind oil. Nothing but death. And coal, all of it. And it's so sad because I'd be willing to give hemp a try. If we had a national referendum tomorrow that said, what would you be willing to give up to switch from an oil-based economy to a hemp-based economy? And I'd say, I don't know, what are you asking for? I'm willing to give it a shot. It's crazy. You know, when you look at the history of oil, and I guess we're going to talk about it now, well, we have to because it's really one of the biggest enemies of hemp apart from the pharma industry.
Well, yeah, the oil and also the plastics. Essentially,
oh, my word, that's all byproducts of oil because when you look at the history of oil, what you see is they found out, hey, this is like, you know, what are we going to do with this stuff? And even today, roughly only a third of a barrel of oil is actually used for any kind of fuel whatsoever. That's all fuels combined. So the remaining two-thirds back in the day, they had a serious problem on their hands. What are we going to do with this? And they've set out on a quest
to use up
the remaining two-thirds of that barrel. And they've done it by making us wear it, making us eat it, making us house ourselves with it. And that's one of the things I'm talking about, where we could graft the banning of hemp and overlay it with grafts of all the ills that we suffer in the world today. And I'll bet you we'd be surprised at the results, because yeah, Oil is all bad.
Well, this country started out with hemp. I hope most of the people that are listening to this show know this. By the way, we have a call-in number. I got about half an hour left. The number is 831-469-3119 if you want to call in and ask either of us a question or talk on this topic. You were talking about hemp and plastics. I was thinking about Bakelite, and it seems to me from the history that I recall of this whole issue that they were just beginning to produce plastics from hemp. And by the way, hemp is different from marijuana or medical marijuana. And it's more than how far apart you plant it, though that's a big, has a lot to do with it. But it's also the genetics are different. And, you know, one of my concerns with hemp is that if you have huge fields of industrial hemp, I've been concerned about them polluting medical grows. Also, this overgrow the world or the government or whatever movement, and this idea of dispersing seeds everywhere. I've been concerned about that polluting medical grows. You want to comment on that?
You know, I think the possibility exists for that to happen. I mean, you could certainly maybe go greenhouse, but then again, yeah, it could be problematic because you're talking about THC content of less than 1 or 2% for sure, or tenths of percent, and certainly you don't want to breed that into your medical strains. I don't know what the answer is, but certainly it could be worked out if we can go to the moon.
Well, I guess it could.
I mean, it's no reason to not try, because the fact is and I don't know if I'm probably preaching to the choir, you know these things, I don't know if the listeners do, but the history of hemp and its uses is so rich, and the reason it was prohibited and the prohibition came about is really it's just an enemy to the corporations, that's all. That's all, because hemp, the inner part of it, well, let's put it this way, to my knowledge, hemp has the highest level of cellulose of any plant. And cellulose is like a building block. You can make dynamite out of hemp. You can make all the plastics. Henry Ford, I don't know if you know, but he built a car out of hemp and could fuel it with hemp. Hemp is an amazing, amazing miracle plant, but they've demonized it. Why? Because you can't patent it and say, oh, that's mine. No, imagine if every American, if they had some ground, could, you know, the Pine Ridge, the white plumes, we should give them a little shout out, because you know what, they're like courageous pioneers up there on the Pine Ridge Reservation. They planted hemp up there. Why? Because they're supposed to be a sovereign nation. What does that mean? That means separate from the United States. They're within our boundaries, but a Native American reservation is a sovereign piece of ground. They have their own law, their own rules, everything. So here they go, and they say, you know what? A buyer in Kentucky says, we'll buy hemp from you if you can grow it. And they decide, you know what? Let's pull ourselves out of this pathetic situation that the United States government's put us in, and let's solve our own problem with hemp. And you know what? They're so chicken shit. They go over there, and they just fly in, and they whack it all down like always, don't take anybody to jail, and then they just fly off. Nope, can't do that. And it's just sad, because if every American could do that, there's a market for it. There's a market for it. You used to be able to grow your own jeans in your backyard, but I guess that hurts the cotton industry. You know, you can make your own medicine. I guess that hurts Merck, you know, Pfizer. I don't know. I mean, it's such an amazing plant. It's astonishing to me that people, number one, don't know, and number two, that they put up with the prohibition of it.
Well, it is more than about more than medicine, and it's about basic rights. It's about human rights. It's about individual rights. It's about freedom of choice. It's about, you know, I think you've done a very good job of talking about how that prohibition is more than just medicine and more than just putting people in jail needlessly.
Well, I could put people to work, and we could, like, oh, my word, I could go on all night about hemp. I mean, we built a hemp, well, you know, there's somebody, well, it gets complicated. Here's the thing. A couple of years ago, Tawny and I, when we were up at Pine Ridge, we went up there and we helped out building this hempcrete community center. Now, we completed it before this other project that was done, and they're trying to say they were the first one. And you know what? Let them have it. So what? We built the hempcrete structure up there in Pine Ridge, and that stuff is so amazing. It is. I could go on about that for half a day. The efficiency, the breathability, the sustainability. We should not be watching big trucks loaded with load after load of lumber traveling down our highways. We should be watching like bales of hemp herds going down our highways so that they could be turned into hempcrete.
You know, I'm trying to recall. It seems to me there was a house in Tennessee made of hempcrete in Chattanooga, maybe.
And I think in North Carolina, in like Asheville, it's becoming very. You know, people are starting to catch on. If you Google hempcrete, you're going to be amazed.
You know, there was a tornado in Chattanooga last week, and I'd be interested in seeing how that house held up.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. It would be.
The tornado might not have been anywhere near the house, but now that you bring it up, and in Asheville, and there was also bad weather there, and that's something I'm going to be looking for.
Well, not to interrupt, but see, here's the problem with it is that, you know, it's an amazing thing, and people are catching on, and builders are going, yeah, but the problem is it has to be imported. So here we are, we got this bad recession, we got all this, you know, the shepherds, you know, took the shears to the flock a little too close this time. Everybody's bleeding. Nobody has any money. And here we have this product that can, you know, oh, my word, where was I going with that? Man, I tricked myself there. But
we used to be a country of farmers, and there was a period. I think it was.
Oh, I know where I was going. Let me finish up on that. Here we got all this economic problem. We've got people out of work and stuff. And one of the reasons hempcrete is slow to catch on is because it costs about half again as much to build a house out of it. But the reason is because you can't have Alex and the rest of the Sioux up there growing on the reservation for us and processing it in Kentucky so it doesn't have to be shipped overseas. Our government's letting the rest of the world kick our butt in the reintroduction of hemp.
Where is it legal to grow now? China, Brazil?
Canada, I believe.
Canada?
I'm not maybe knowledgeable enough on that, but it's coming from somewhere. I think the hempcrete, the hemp herds that we used came from Great Britain, I believe. I'm not sure. Maybe by way of some other country, because I don't really think Great Britain's going to probably buck the United States on marijuana law.
You're talking about when you were building this, was it a community center, you said, in Pine Ridge?
Yeah.
Out of hempcrete.
Yeah, we did it with the cooperation of American Lime Tech out of Chicago. Give those guys a shout out. And there was a master mason associated with the project. What was his name? He's a great guy. His site, it's there. There might be some information there about the project we did. But yeah, they're really big in introducing, you know, this as a product again. But it's all imported, and we should be importing it from people's farmland.
Well, you want to take a little break and let me put on a little music and then take about 10 or 15 minutes to wind up and close up the show?
Sure. I'll do a little medicating and listen to some music.
Yeah, I think we'll try to get this one on. It's supposedly Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
All right.
Yeah, if we can...
talking.
Is Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers' Last Dance with Mary Jane. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. I've been speaking the past couple of hours with Mike Booten of Grace Farm. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, and if you go to the internet, it's www.freakradio.org. We've got just a few minutes left in the show. We have a call-in number here that's 831-469-3119 if you want to call in and ask a question. And as I said, we've been speaking the past couple of hours with Mike Booten of Grace Farms up in Trinity County. You still there, Mike?
Oh, I'm still here, man. You know what? That song was perfect. We play that in the lounge here. That's like total cult classic right there.
Oh, you haven't really talked that much about the farm. You mentioned that you have a place, you said a three-bedroom place for people to stay. You haven't mentioned the lounge.
Well, we sit on 8 acres up here, and totally right. If you threw a dart into the center of the Emerald Triangle, it would hit my house. And, you know, my house, and there's another house on the property that we put people up in. We have what we call Mary Jane's Reefer Lounge. That's why it's a big hit out there. And just in case everybody's wondering, Johnny Stash and the Hemp Seed Boys, that's the house band. You come to Grace Farms and play a little music, get on our stage, you're a Hemp Seed Boy. So we like to have fun, and, you know, that's what we're going to be doing all summer. We're going to also have a new online ebook coming out, Growing Grace, The Grace Farm Way, teaching people on a little bit more economical scale how to get over those humps and get themselves some great medication.
Well, I guess you better mention your website then.
Yeah, it's gracefarmonline.org, and we're also on Facebook, Grace Farm, and also on Facebook we have the Grace Farm Project, which is a good place to go and see that video that we were talking about, the pitch reel that Steve put together. And the only other thing that I wanted to say was it sort of popped into my head when you talked about the crime against humanity, the prohibition of hemp. And one of the most ironic things I think about it that most people probably don't know is that one of the very first cannabis laws in our country was in Jamestown Colony in 1611, and it was that you had to grow hemp.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of those...
the founding fathers grew hemp. There's various times in this country it was mandatory to grow hemp. So this prohibition is evil. It's criminal, and really, you know, I'll just go out on a limb here and make some enemies. But the fact of the matter is, I really believe that the war on drugs has done nothing but turn America's police force into a military presence, and it's turned them into lackeys and the modern day muscle for the pharmaceutical mob, for the corporation mob. It's the same as back in Chicago. You know, Capone had people that enforced his will, and that's what the government has. They have people enforcing the will of the corporations, and that is no healing plants, no Mother Nature's healing plants for you, son.
Yeah, I see it as tyranny myself. I think I would be living comfortably and a very productive citizen today if it weren't for the prohibition. I would probably not be living in California.
Yeah, you should be able to live wherever you want, Craig, and be a medical marijuana patient. It's as simple as that. And, you know, one thing I wanted to get out there, too, is that's one of the things that makes us a little bit different in our eyes is that when we ask you to support Grace Farms, when we ask you to come book your vacation here and come learn how to grow, we're not asking you to make us fat. We're asking you to join a revolution. We're asking you to get on board and trust that we're going to use what we get from the endeavor to push the agenda that this prohibition has to stop. And the more people we can teach to help themselves, no matter what state they come from, that's just pushing it further down the road.
Yeah, I do firmly believe it is going to have to end sooner or later. It's tyranny as far as I see it. It's destroying the Constitution. I just do not believe that arresting people for growing a plant is what these people who fled England, and most of them fled religious tyranny,
correct,
had in mind when they fought and died.
No, they totally didn't. And let's not forget one thing. This is one thing I very much like to drive home to people, because you know what? We've become a country full of whiners who say, oh, look at that, look at this, somebody ought to make a law. Really? Really? Because you know what? Here's the thing. Let me tell everybody what a crime is. There's only a few things that constitute a crime. And that is, number one, I don't have the right to harm another person. That's a crime. I don't have the right to damage another person's property. That's a crime. I don't have the right to enter into a financial agreement, monetary agreement with you, and then renege and defraud you, but then let's refer back to number one. I just harmed you. So that's it. Everything else is a choice, not a criminal offense. My choice being as valid as yours. If you want to stuff poison down your body and treat a symptom and not get well, that's your business. Go ahead. Don't say I have to. And don't say I'm a criminal because I choose not to and I choose to use one of Mother Nature's healing plants, what I consider a miracle plant.
Well, I agree with you. I think on that note, Mike, I'm going to wrap this up. I really appreciate you being here for spending the last couple of hours with me. Again, my guest tonight has been Mike Booten from Grace Farms. www.gracefarmonline.org is the website. They have a collective. It's up in Trinity County. He and his wife, Tawny, are going to be teaching classes for growing this summer, and they have a collective for medical marijuana patients and deliver once a month throughout the state of California. And the lowest cost for medicine that I've ever heard of. Anything else you want to add to that, Mike?
No, just the thing about the ebook coming out probably next month. We'll offer some of that online stuff. And, you know, one of the things I've seen that some of the other people doing it do is they let you have it for 30 days and then it disappears. You know what? Hey, I want you to have it. I want you to be a success. You get it from us, it's yours. Keep it. You know what? So that's all. You know, we're here to help. We really are. And so, you know what? You support us, you're going to push this movement forward.
Well, thanks again, Mike, and it was really good to have you on the show, and I'll be hoping to have you on again, and my best regards to you and Tawny and everyone up there.
Yeah, and you know what? Anytime, Craig, I totally enjoyed it, and I appreciate it. Hope I didn't foam at the mouth too much, but, man, have a great evening, and we'll be seeing you again because, you know, it's about time for a weed miracle.
Yeah, well, you know, next time that you're on the show, I think I'll give you a break about half an hour or an hour into the show and play some music instead of making you talk for an hour and a half.
Oh, no, I was fine with it. I'd like to, you know, I'm telling you what, that's why I want that show. I want, like, a stump 27 feet high to stand on and talk about hemp.
Well, I don't know how high this, I'm overmodulating, how high that this stump is here in Santa Cruz. We sometimes reach quite far.
Well, cool, man. I appreciate it, brother. I love you.
Okay.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye. And so that was Mike Booten from Grace Farms, and hopefully I did just disconnected him correctly. And you're listening to Canada on Cannabis, which is the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And I've got 4 minutes, so I'm going to put on some music and close the show. And give you a few seconds of dead air while I type in something on the internet and look for something to play here. Well, I'm going to close with, I think, one of my favorite songs, which is Walking on the Sun by Smash Mouth. Hopefully.
Tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and focus on the close up. Missed always a carry form. No God!